He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
So I thought we, Robin is not here to give us direction.
Right, because otherwise I would have said, "This is, you know, he is Robin Leach."
Right, and he is Robin Leach.
Oh, he is definitely Robin
Leach. And we'll hear back from him, I'm sure. I was going to talk a little bit about electric cars. Obviously, it's a topic that's, you know, always on the top of the list when it comes to cars. Little bits here and there. Elon Musk just announced that they might reach a new milestone and break the 100,000 car, 100,000 sales in the third quarter. That would be a milestone. And, you know, we know, and that will be mostly Model 3s, which are selling like hotcakes, as we know. Now, on the flip side of, you know, all day, you know,
the miracle of the electric car
and the coolness of the Tesla 3, of which I am a big fan, there seem to be some manufacturing issues with the cars. That I've read reports about rust issues, paint quality issues, seal issues. I would personally like to believe, and that's to tell you how much I drink some of the Kool-Aid anyway. I'd like to believe that the issues were mostly with the first batches of cars, when we know that they were having production issues and they were scrambling to get the first cars out. I'd like to think that since then, manufacturing quality
has improved.
And there's no reason not to believe so, because we also know that the Tesla Model S has been around for, you know, almost 10 years now. And a while back, I was just curious. So I went on Auto Trader and other used car sites and started searching for used Teslas. And I wanted to see, well, you know, 5, 6, 7-year-old Tesla, how many miles do they have? And tried to look at Carfaxes and see the problems they've had. And it seems that they have been pretty reliable. And some of them do have high miles. And they seem to keep their value as much as other cars, you know, non-electric cars, non-Teslas, for like 5-year-old cars with same amount of miles, whatever the percentage is, you know, 50% of what the price was new. Maybe a little less. I saw older cars like under $30,000, you know, the first Tesla Model S's. Anyway, Tesla's around, is pulling the rest of the market. There are other manufacturers out there, new manufacturers. We've talked about Rivian and their pickup trucks. We've talked about Rivian and their deal with Amazon to produce up to 100,000 delivery vans.
Figure out who Rivian is. Is it Chinese?
No. Rivian is totally American. Okay. Amazon has a big stake in Rivian, which is why they placed, you know,
that order. Okay.
That order. Which is, you know, 100,000 vehicles is a lot, but it's really down the line, because they're talking 10,000 vehicles between 2020 and 2030. So obviously 100,000 is way.
So you're talking 10,000 in 10, so basically 1,000 a year,
yes,
for the next,
yes,
10 years.
Yeah,
and this is just a moment where anyone who knows or has to put up with me is just, you've got to read beneath the headline. You've just got to, because otherwise you get a completely different, 100,000 vehicles. Oh, wow. That's
right.
That's going to be online or on stream, as Robin Leach would say.
Yes. I think the 10,000 over 10, you know, 1,000 vehicles a year is not unreasonable at all.
Nor is it Bupkis. If you're just starting a new.
Amazon, there are a lot of Amazon
delivery
vehicles and deliveries out there, and there's only going to be more in the future. I mean, that's.
But just also a reminder, because they're also doing this drone thing, you know, it's like, all right, well, not everything apparently is going to be coming to you.
I think we're going to see the delivery vans before the drones on the large scale.
Just mentioning it again for time frame and widening out people's lenses, because they tend to hear things and think that it's tomorrow.
And it brought me back, this whole delivery van thing with Amazon and Rivian. got me thinking to what we were talking about, I think maybe 6 months ago or so. The USPS has another contract out there to build another mail delivery van to replace those little shoe boxes that we've seen for the last 30 years or so. Or 20 years, and it's also a 20-year contract, and it's up for bid. And actually, Robin and I were talking about this last week, and off the show, off the air, and you know, wondering why delivery companies like even Amazon or UPS, FedEx could not, or the USPS could not take an existing van out there. There are good little delivery vans, and adapt them for mail delivery. It seems like a why reinvent the wheel and go out and design a purposely built vehicle for which you have to store parts for the next 20 years. That was just our take on it.
About electric, though. I mean, yeah. That's all great. As you know from a few weeks ago, I had just heard the other side, something that I hadn't thought about at all, just in terms of, you know, what it takes to actually produce an electric car that's so good for the environment, et cetera, once it's. And I don't know if there's sufficient. I personally don't have sufficient knowledge.
Neither do I. And those issues come up all the time, right? You know, the battery production is always a concern. And battery production, and then battery disposal, and I had also read something that, quite frankly, I didn't file and didn't take notes on that. But there was an article about battery disposals in France and what they were planning. And I should go back to that article. And it's kind of a prediction of what we can expect to have to deal with in the next decades or the decades ahead, yeah. But, you know.
What do you do? Just stick them in the earth? Or is it okay?
I don't have an answer. Humbly.
What are those called? Superfund sites or whatever?
Yeah.
And as with many products, I would say that vaping's a perfect example. You know, certain things that come to light in the even abuse. There's every way to use something. There's every way to abuse it.
Right.
And typically when you are bringing something to market, you're more focused on getting it to market than dealing with how other people might misuse it. And once you've got it to market and you've invested all that time and energy, you've got to sell it.
Yeah.
And you know, it seems as though there's a fairly wide margin. I am really straining my diplomacy bones here. There's a wide margin for unintended consequences.
Right.
Or selective.
Time will tell, and those issues will come up as the years go by. But in the meantime, we're not going to see, electric vehicles in the U.S. are lagging what sales are worldwide in the last year or two, and I honestly can't figure out why. But we do have we mentioned Rivian. There's Bollinger that makes a cool, mean-looking truck. And then there is another company, which I didn't even know existed, that I was just reading about this morning, Canoe. And Canoe makes... they're coming out with a prototype of a van, which actually makes a lot of sense. It's a shoebox on a electric platform. As we know, electric vehicles usually have their battery packs, on the floor of the vehicle, and it's an integral part of the structure of the vehicle. So there really is nothing over the battery pack and the electric motors that are on one or the other or both axles, but it leaves a lot of room for passenger and cargo space. And this Canoe vehicle is pretty cool looking. It looks like it could go one way or the other. I mean, besides the steering wheel and the lights and the rearview mirrors, I think it's identical in the front and in the rear as far as looks. Anyway, a lot going on in the electric vehicles, and I look at the what goes on in China, and there are a dozen manufacturers out there all trying to be the Chinese Tesla. So we're going to see them for quite a long time. I mean, and you know, over the years, there will be more and more electric vehicles. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, I think, you know, as Robin would say, enough. Move on to the next subject. You know, looking at industry news in the car world, you know, the one topic we've seen now for the last 2 weeks is the strike at GM. And although I honestly have not been following what's been going on between management and the unions, the strike has been going on for, what, about 2 weeks now?
And the purpose of the strike is?
Purpose of the strike is always boils down to money. Okay. Higher wages, no temps. It brings me back to about 2008, you know, when we had the big financial crisis and auto manufacturers went belly up. And I remember at the time when the U.S. government came in and saved Chrysler at the time, before it became Fiat Chrysler, and the government actually sold the company to Fiat, in essence. I remember the average salary of a worker, the starting salary had dropped from, like, I think $27 an hour to $11 an hour. So post bailout, workers at Chrysler were starting at $11, whereas they had been working, starting wages had been at $27 an hour. Now, this is going 10 years back, but so obviously, I mean, without going into any details, and I don't have any, I don't know anything about it, I think the manufacturing labor force in the auto industry probably did take a hit as far as benefits and pay, you know, post, after the 2008 recession. And they're trying to get that back. I mean, they're just arguing that, you know.
Or at least some of it.
Some of it. GM's making a lot of money. They're making a lot of cars. I don't know where this is going. I mean, so far the estimates are that this strike has cost GM $500 million. And that's based on the lost opportunity of, I don't know how many, it's thousands of cars that are not being manufactured and that obviously are not being sold.
And just before the strike, there was a whole, at least press flurry rollout that GM is switching or is making a huge bet on electric.
They are. Again, we're circling back to electric vehicles.
For the purpose of anything
to... They are. And I think actually it brings me to another article I was reading this morning or last night. You know, again, labor...
costs.
Labor unions are vocalizing the fact that you know, there are less moving parts in an electric vehicle. It takes 40% less labor to assemble a battery pack and a electric motor, you know, the whole transmission and power plant unit on an electric car than it does to produce a combustion engine and a drivetrain and transmissions, gearboxes, et cetera, that we find on a gas or diesel powered engine. So, you know, 40% less labor. Well, some of the jobs are going away is the logical immediate conclusion. So there are concerns on the labor side of things. You know, not to bring up all the, you know, manufacturing that we see overseas. Even though in that respect, people tend to forget that a lot of foreign manufacturers build cars here in the U.S.
Of people forget a lot of clumps that go into the argument, which brings me to one of my favorite. History begins at the point in time most convenient to the argument. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'll go to my grave saying this, but it's better to get a wider view of the components, no pun intended, so that you've got a better sense of the position that you're...
It's just become horribly complicated. I mean, every year, one of the car magazines will come out with the, an article on the State of the Union in the world of the automotive world and the car industry, and it is just a very complex.
Right, but all with all respect, and I just remember many years ago, pre-Katrina, there was the obligatory "New Orleans is a bowl, and one day the levees are going to fail." Article that the prophylactic article, and you know everyone's and until it actually happened, and it was a complete bleep show. It's like we wrote the article, and all I'm essentially saying is, at least if we can let people, I dare say most people aren't going to sit around going, oh, let me forget about my daily. Life to figure out the state of the automotive industry. But at least if we say, yeah, it's actually not just as cut and dry. It's not, it's a big, it's
yeah, I mean,
complicated.
You know, before the Ford, what was it? I was going to say the LTD, but the...
You mean the Model T?
No. Come on. It's pretty pathetic. I can't even think about it. The last big Ford
Explorer?
No, the ones that the cops and the taxis had.
Oh, Crown Victorious.
Yeah, thank you very
Crown
much.
Crown Vic.
The Crown Vic. Well, the Crown Vic was built in Canada. It was mostly, the add value in the Crown Vic was Canadian. I mean, it was a Canadian car, and that's just
it's just a piece of an example. That's very funny because I wonder how many people that would be a good name the seven dwarfs would be a good bar game.
So speaking of Ford, and I'll come back to maybe the rest of the industry. There's one car or SUV rather in the Ford lineup that actually I think is going to be critical for Ford, but it's a really cool vehicle. It's the new Ford Explorer, and I know we've talked about it a little bit, but it's now hitting the market, and you can find it, in dealerships. And the Ford Explorer is the 2020 Explorer is built on a rear-wheel drive platform. So, by the way, Ford could go back and make a big sedan that is rear-wheel drive based if they wanted to, and very easily. It's a 2-year time frame; they could get it done. That platform, the Ford Explorer and the Lincoln Navigator share that same platform. It's a medium to large SUV, like bread and butter for every manufacturer out there. I think it looks cool. I think the specs are great. There's a 4-cylinder turbo engine as a base engine, and there's a V6 turbo as an optional engine. I'm not sure if they have the standard non-turbo V6 somewhere in the line like they had the previous model. But my point is, it's a vehicle, interestingly, it sells for starting price under $30,000, but the top of the lines are selling for $66,000, $67,000. So it's a hugely wide range. And honestly, from a marketing standpoint, I find it difficult that you can go and sell a $65,000 vehicle if you're selling the same model at a $30,000 price point. That's
You might not have been born, but Jeep Cherokee. They had the absolute, it was a Flintstone mobile, the first level, the sport, when it first came out. The sport, and it was, I mean, it, and then there was, I think, the Pioneer or something.
Yeah.
And there was the Laredo.
Yeah.
And the Grand Cherokee. Yeah. Super loaded at that time as they'd come.
But still, it's more than double the price.
Yeah.
And actually, the more expensive Ford Explorers.
And by the way, this was years and years ago, but my point is that you could walk out, you could drive out of a dealership with a Sport for X that would get you three wheels of a Grand Cherokee and no interior.
Yeah.
So it's not a new model, so to speak. I mean, a new pricing model.
No,
it's,
a new marketing strategy. But it's interesting. I mean, if they can pull it off, kudos to them because, they also have the Lincoln Aviator. Did I say Navigator before? It's Aviator anyway. The Lincoln Aviator in price ranges from the mid to high 50s to probably around $80,000. So it's the upscale version of the Ford Explorer. Different looks, but same underpinnings. So the question is, if you walk into a Ford dealership, a Ford / Lincoln dealership, why would you buy a $65,000 Ford Explorer if you can buy the same vehicle as a Lincoln Navigator? I don't know. Maybe some people will prefer the Ford Explorer.
Is it the same badging?
Except
for the badging.
Well, no. The differences are greater okay. than they used to be. It used to be that they just slapped different badges on, right? Between Mercury. Ford and Lincoln.
That's a Sable. Oh, that's a...
You're right. No. There are more the differences.
I was never
able
to quite...
They don't
around
really
that.
Look alike.
Okay.
But the underpinnings are still the same.
Okay.
And it is a car base. It's it's not a body-on-frame chassis. It is a real car chassis. So it'll be an interesting vehicle to follow. I think it'll do very well.
All right. You've got 3 minutes for safety tips. How do you want to
safety
use it?
Safety tips. My safety tips are always the same. But
apparently they need to be repeated. Sorry that they're boring. Walkers.
Stay cool. I mean, I guess one of my things as I get older is avoiding what you call in the racing world red mist. And if people tick you off on the road, you just stay cool and collected. People who know me well are probably chuckling right now. But I actually have learned to keep my cool behind the wheel. And it goes a long way towards staying on the road. Too many times you'll see people who just take the bait or think you're driving aggressively and start reacting, and it's better to just let them go.
That advice is probably true in much of life. I don't know whether...
Do as I say and not as I do.
follow my example.
Exactly.
All right. And just out there in the car world universe, is there anything do you have any more adventures planned? Are you going off to any?
Nope, no adventures. I do think I'm going back to safety safety is always serious. I was reading recently, just got an email in my inbox a couple of days ago about the new Skip Barber Racing School, and they are doing a teens driving school at Lime Rock. I don't remember what the dates are. I think sometime in October. And they've partnered up with one of the big multiple location driving schools in the state. And I think that's a good thing. I don't know much about it, but look it up, skipbarber.com. I'm sure you can find some information on the track site as well.
He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Geeks.